Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins by near third. This game is over.
A complete game. What a performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it. And the Phillies are going back to the World Series.
Welcome to Continued Success. I'm Justin Clue, the head guy at The Good Fight. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. We're just going to get right through that intro because I feel like we have a lot of feelings right now. As we record this, the Phillies are losing 7-4 to the Washington Nationals in what I can only say feels like a loss at its most intense. Liz, tonight, Nick Pivetta, after the Phillies tied the game up at 3-3 in the top of the fifth, thanks in part to a Gene Segura solo home run. Pretty cool. That happened in the top of the fifth. Jay Bruce hit a home run to give the Phillies their fourth run in the top of the seventh. But in the bottom of the sixth, that was the trouble spot where Anthony Rendon hit a home run. Victor Robles hit a three-run home run. And Nick Pivetta seemingly responsible for the majority of the trouble in this one. Gave up six earned runs, seven hits, three walks, made it a five and a third innings. Liz, does it feel like with the 2019 Phillies, just as soon as it seems like you got one plate steady, another one starts to wobble?
That's exactly how it feels. I mean, are there any plates in the air right now?
Is Scott Kingery still in the air? I feel like that's weird.
Maybe he's still in the air. Did he make an error at some point recently? I feel like I saw people whining about that. I'll admit, I haven't watched a whole ton of Phillies baseball in the past couple of days. I've stayed with it through tweets and articles, but it's been hard to watch. It's been hard to willingly subject myself to. Even I have limits.
I will say that this is an indication of fans' faith in the team right now, which I gotta say, you know, we're an easily scarable bunch. But I put out a poll this afternoon asking, you know, the next 10 games after this Nationals game, the Phillies play the Mets and the Marlins for 10 games. And I put this out there to the Good Fight staff earlier that playing the Braves and then the Nationals and then the Marlins feels like the Phillies are playing a video game that is automatically decreasing the difficulty based on their skill level. So hopefully they can give the Marlins a little more of a fight than the Braves and Nationals, though it is upsetting to think that the Marlins are closer to the Phillies' skill level right now than any of their other competition in the NL East. But I put out a poll asking how many wins the Phillies would get out of 10 games against the Mets and Marlins, two teams that have not been doing so hot this season. And 13% of 141 voters said they would win 8. 25% said 6, 17% said 4, and 45% said go Scott Kingery. So I think that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame anybody. It's been rough. It's been so rough. Like, it's from those when the injuries started and things began to get shaky. Like, we were trying to be optimistic, thinking that this would only be a small dip, but then there were a lot of injuries and things have just gone consistently downhill, and it's been hard to find reasons to stay positive. And so I can't blame anybody for feeling badly. I feel badly. Everyone feels badly. This is not how we wanted things to go.
I think it's pretty obvious to suggest that we at the Good Fight podcast family feel as though there is a lot to learn from history, from Philly's history specifically, and that there's a very cyclical nature to this. And if you went back, and as we do on this podcast, where we talk about the 2009 Phillies and chronicle the success and stories of that team, even just with that team, let alone all the teams that were part of the golden era of success from 2007 to 2011, that there were points of struggle that we kind of forget about and don't really talk about because they just sort of, because those teams made the postseason, we really only think about the ends of their seasons. And we don't really think about the struggles that got them, that they had to overcome to get to the playoffs. And as we discussed last week, the 2009 Phillies, who went all the way to the World Series, who won the National League pennant, struggled mightily in June, did not look like a good team, did not look like a team that should be leading the NL East, though they continued to, despite their struggles. And I have this theory that it's easier for us to get really shaken and upset about the 2019 Phillies because we don't know what this team looks like when it's good. The last golden era of Phillies teams, you know, they made the playoffs in 2007, then they went right to the World Series in 08 and won it all. So after that, it was just sort of like, yeah, we know what this team looks like when it's good. Yeah, we bitched and moaned a bit when they weren't doing so hot, but we also knew fully what they were capable of. It's like on an individual player basis, you know, we look at Bryce Harper and we think he won the MVP award in 2015. We look at JT Realmuto, we think, oh, he's the best catcher in baseball. Look what he did last year. We know, we look at Aaron Nola, that's a great case, last year, a true ace on the Phillies staff. We look at these guys and we know what they're capable of because we've seen what they're capable of. We have evidence of what they're capable of because they did it right in front of our eyes. And when they're not doing that, it's upsetting. So as a team, we don't know what the 2019 Phillies look like when they are succeeding as a team, even though we know on, in some cases individually, they are, you know, elite level baseball players. So if this truly is the start of another great era of Phillies baseball, we sort of have a handicap here of them not being World Series champions immediately, like the last great Phillies teams were. So it's harder to imagine them overcoming a rough patch like this. Now, I'm not saying this because I've been particularly positive. In fact, I think I've been particularly cynical about this particular stretch of struggles the Phillies have had. But I do think, I don't know, I think that's a pertinent idea. What do you think?
I can't disagree. You know, thinking about that team, it did take a few years to come together, but they were all homegrown stars. So they had that time with a bunch, you know, with, you know, some relative crap around them to sort of work everything out. But they were all pretty good to start. Like, you acquire a Bryce Harper and a JT Realmuto, and you think this is what you're supposed to get. You're supposed to get the fully formed superstar. And, you know, injuries and bad luck and whatever else has kind of made it all, you know, it's not that way. It's not the way it was. And I don't know if, you know, you can't recreate that. You can only hope to find another way to do it that's successful.
I mean, things are different.
I mean, the Phillies are trying as hard as they can. Because the way that they did it last time is not available to them.
Are
now.
They? They're not hustling out of the box. Is that trying as hard as they can?
For the love of God. I don't even want to talk about that because I just, there's no good answer.
I didn't plan to, but you gave me the thing there. We won't talk about that. It's not
Thank
worth discussing.
God, I don't want to. No one wants to hear me talk about it. No one wants to talk about it.
I'm very, very bored with this narrative. I don't even think, you know, I think there's something to the idea of like, oh yeah, well, obviously fans want players who run hard on every play, but we all know that's not what this is about. So, but I'm so bored with this. We're not going to talk about it. I do think that going out and what the Phillies had to do was go out and buy this talent. Like you said, and they got a lot of good players. There's still really good players on this team. Maybe we just don't feel like we know them that well. Like why aren't there fan groups anymore? That used to be like a thing at Citizens Bank Park. They would be in eras where there were not even good teams. We're looking at like the Birdcage for Paul Bird and the Wolfpack for Randy Wolf and the Padilla Flotilla for Vicente Padilla, who probably didn't deserve one, you know, like.
I feel like that had died out by 09, by 10.
Do those guys just all have families now? They're like not, they don't do that. Like that's so complex an idea that another generation of fans can't take that mantle on. I just feel like that gives you something to anchor your fandom to.
And just, I mean, it's an interesting thing because, I mean, it hasn't been around in Philadelphia for a while. It's not really a thing in most places anymore. Like they had something for Felix Hernandez out in, Seattle. Mm-hmm. And that is the only one I can think of off the top of my head. Like the Aaron Judge stuff a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Where they're all dressed with like judges robes and the white.
But it's like,
that's good.
It's very specific. It has to be easy.
Right.
It has to be a certain level of easy. And the player has to achieve a certain level of success, I think, now to warrant that.
That's fair. I mean, like Howard's homers.
I guess everyone just had lower standards a couple of years ago. Howard. Randy Wolf, everyone.
Yeah, that's true. The Wolf Pack. That's
no no disrespect.
Absolutely no disrespect, but that's a much easier conclusion to get to than Howard's homers, where it was like a bunch of guys wearing Homer Simpson masks or Utley's Uglies. Utley's Uglies, a bunch of guys wearing like hideous masks.
What's wrong with us? Jesus Christ.
We were having fun. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
What the hell was that? I'm sorry. What sad unemployed.
I totally disagree. I'm just saying, just because you take off work to tailgate for 6 hours before the game and buy you and your friends a bunch of Homer Simpson masks to be in Howard's Homers. I mean, I think that's great. I don't think there's a negative part of that at all. That's brilliant.
No, I don't disagree with you. That's just a real bizarre way to go.
You know what? It took a little creativity. Took a little legwork, and I respect
that. That's what my reaction is about. I'm just like, Howard's home, really?
Mm.
I mean,
they made it work. Like, what does Ryan Howard do?
Well,
he hits homers. Who's a famous homer? How can we convey Homer in mask form? I got it.
Homer from the Odyssey, the author of the Odyssey.
There you go. See, that would have worked too, except, you know, maybe not as well.
Or something that's actually period appropriate and not something that I, you know, cultural appropriation.
But here we are in the present where it's 2019. The Phillies are, yep, still losing to the Washington Nationals.
Thanks for the update.
And I have a couple of questions I want to ask you, Liz, that are based on just, you know, what we've seen from the 2019 Phillies. You know, we've reached that point in watching this team. We watched them drop series. We watched them lose two games of a doubleheader. People aren't feeling especially good about this team. We did a roundtable on the Good Fight today where we tried to figure out what exactly is wrong with this team. And the answer is that it's a lot of different things right now. So let's talk about what everyone's talking about, which is the future, which is the rest of 2019, which is crazy to think that it's June 20th and we're looking that far ahead. We're not even at the All-Star break, but you know what? This team has made it really difficult not to think this is just going to last forever. You know, it feels sad to operate on a dog's brain patterns with no object permanence that, like, you know, you pick up a dog and they're like, well, I don't like this, but what if it's like this forever? I have no reason to think it won't be. It's just kind of where the team has brought us that, like, well, what if it's just like this forever? This sucks. So let's break that down for a minute. So I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions and you let me know what you think. Are the Phillies at 500 before the end of the month of June? They currently sit, I believe, 5 games over 500, and it is June 20th. There are 30 days in June. Yes, I just did the little rhyme in my head.
Everyone does. Mm-hmm. So it's 10 more days in June. They have to go. All right.
Well, let's again consider the schedule. Let's see.
Yeah, I was just going to say, let's see, who are they playing? They are playing.
Well, remember, they have 10 games against the Marlins and then the Mets. And then the Marlins again. So tomorrow they start a 3-game series against the Marlins. Then it's 4 games against the Mets. And all 7 of those games are in Philadelphia, if that means anything to you. And then they play 3 games against the Marlins. And that's the end of their games in June.
Okay. If you forgive me for a second, I'm going to take a quick look at how the 2019 Marlins are doing. Just because I don't trust anything.
Basically, this question asks, does this team lose so much to bad teams that they no longer have a winning record overall? I was going to say, basically, this question asks, do they go 5-5? But that wouldn't end in them being 500. So it's late at night. It's tough for me to do math in my head, clearly. I can't even remember how many days are in which month.
I'm looking at the Marlins. I'm like, who do they have pitching now? 3 of their starters are on the disabled list. That's not good. I think maybe they will be, I feel like they're due to be slaughtered by the Mets in addition to whatever's going to happen with the rest of this series, whatever is happening with it. I think they've
it's still happening. For some reason, I have this weird, like, I feel like, I guess that'll lead into my next question so much. So I don't want to ask that yet, but I guess I see them being like a game or two above 500 by the end of June.
Yeah, I would just say just hovering above 500 just by like the breath of the Lord.
Yeah, I don't think things are going to get better by a significant margin anytime soon, even though they're playing weaker teams. But I don't know. For some reason, I feel like that's going to take some extra work, even though I have no reason to think that. This team has given us no reason lately to think that that it's going to achieve any measure of success. So we're in agreement that they will not fall to 500 before the end of June, but they will be very close. That's fair?
Yes, okay. I concur.
All right, so let me ask this next question then. Are the Phillies in 2019 currently in free fall?
Is there like such a thing as half of a free fall? I don't know. That's not an answer. Yeah, I know. I'm just like, that's not an answer.
I'm going to force you to go yes or no on this one.
That's a stupid thing to say. It's a dumb thing to say that I said. they're losing, but like, how bad are they?
Like, are the Phillies in such, are they in such a bad spot that nothing is working and will nothing continue to work for the foreseeable future?
I can't agree with that. I think that is not quite right. I think we might be approaching that or approaching that point. I don't know. But I mean, I also don't, here's the thing. We can say they're in free fall and they can approach whatever point we think a free fall is. I don't see this team ever really conceding that it's happening or making any significant changes.
Really? I feel like I'm worried, you know, when they added Jay Bruce, I was like, oh boy. Like, obviously, it's been somewhat effective to have added Jay Bruce. He was a huge boon to the offense when he was first acquired. But it just reminded me of last season, in the back half of the season, when it suddenly they were just panic adding a series of veterans who played no role and did nothing but take time away from the players we actually did want to see on the field. Obviously it didn't become that. And he did, like I said, he was productive, once the Phillies acquired Jay Bruce, but yeah, I'm just, I feel like we got to settle this question because it's kind of where everyone's at. We knew last year, I feel like we all reached it eventually. We disagreed as the Phillies approached free fall, but once they reached it, everyone was pretty much in agreement. So that, I feel like, was uncommon enough that we, as Phillies fans, all agreed that the team had reached an irrecoverably bad state where they were just they were just out. And it was, you know, they had plenty of time to get back in, but they weren't going to get back in. And they did not get back in. And I think even they would have admitted by the end of the season that there was a complacency going on that just had no room in that clubhouse. And the fact that this team, which was designed to be so much better, is even making us think a little bit about that team is really crushing. Like, that sucks. This team not supposed to be that team at all.
No, that team had a sort of semi-sustained period of success before free falling for like two straight months.
That team had to work hard to get into first place. This team has been in first place.
Exactly. That team had to work. God, 2018 was really terrible. Because I'm thinking about it now. I'm just like, it had to work hard to get us to a point where we could believe that something could happen. And then they slowly crushed us. Wow. This team is at least different. I don't know if it's better or worse. I haven't decided yet. It might be worse, but it's different at the very least. It's not the same.
I mean, this team has better players on it, I would say, like without a doubt.
Which is why I can't quite get to the free fall point. I feel like we're a little, you know, they're... If they get through this, if they can't get through this next series with the Marlins with a series win, we have a problem.
Let's make that our answer. Actually, I'm going to expand it to the next 10 games. We're coming up on the All-Star break. The All-Star game's July 9th. Feels, again, like it's pretty early this year. If the Phillies have a losing record in the next 10, among their next 10 games against the Marlins and Mets, I will say that they are in free fall. I would think that is a fair statement because these are teams they should beat. They are teams this team should beat even when they're crippled by injury, even when the pitching isn't exactly holding up. This team should be able to outpace the Marlins and the Mets. This team should be able to at least keep pace with the worst team in the National League. If they can't even do that, I will say this team is absolutely in free fall. And I don't know if a bunch of panic moves that Matt Klentak makes are going to do much. I think the best thing that has happened to this team is that this has happened with over half the season left to play. I think real estate on the schedule is this team's biggest blessing right now.
Yes. There's nowhere to get. Okay. That's not true. There's further to fall. I personally think there's much further to fall, but we're still before the All-Star break. There is still a lot. There's still time left. There is a lot of season left, and anything can happen. Anything can happen because the Braves sucked earlier this year, and their pitching has continued to suck. And the Phillies have had problems, but statistically, they can't last forever. They just can't. Eventually, something will change. We just have to keep remembering that because these players are good. They're worthy of our faith, and it's hard right now, and I fault no one, including myself, for being negative and letting off steam. But there is still time left to change things. There is a path for them forward where they're better. And they just have to find it. Who knows what it's going to be, whether it's, you know, luck or, you know, just time, people healing from injuries and a series of, you know, very shrewd moves. But there is a path out there for them to make it to the playoffs and actually be a contender. And I'm just hoping that Matt Klentak and everyone finds it. They just have to find it.
Well, speaking of there being potentially no time left, I'm going to ask you the last two questions I have for you right after this break. Well, Liz, we're breaking down the 2019 Phillies down to nothing. Then we're going to build them right back up. I've been asking you some questions, some hard questions, I'll admit that, some tough questions about the 2019 Phillies. We're being forced into a corner here where we really have to face some hard truths about this team. And a lot of those hard truths are the losses themselves that we've witnessed them have. They've made us think about the future of this team, not just this year, but, you know, maybe even in the years to come. I haven't really grappled with that component yet, but we're still pretty much just struggling in 2019 here. So we've agreed that the Phillies aren't in free fall, just that after the next 10 games, if they have a losing record against some of the worst teams in the NL, then I am saying that they will be in free fall after that. But I did want to ask you two more questions, one of which is, I had originally phrased this question as, do you think the Phillies will fall below second place in the NL East this season? But I'm changing that because I feel like that's painfully naive. And I will instead ask you this. What is the lowest standing in the National League East do you think the Phillies
really
will
hate,
hit this year?
You know, fighting my inner my inner negative person, mm-hmm. because I feel like the obvious answer is yes, they will. Maybe it's for a game or two. You know,
oh no, that was the original question. I'm asking how low in the division you think.
Low? Oh God, fourth. That's what I meant.
That's my answer as well. Yes.
Yeah, okay. I think it's fourth. I think maybe just for, as I was saying, just for a game or two, just for, you know, maybe over these next games for some reason. I don't know. Who knows? But I think that will happen. That doesn't mean it will finish that way.
I agree.
But I think it will happen.
I totally agree with that. I don't think that they will finish in fourth place. I think it's completely feasible that this team dips into fourth place at some point. I think it's totally realistic to imagine the Braves being at the top of the division by a considerable margin, the Nationals bypassing the Phillies after a series just like this one. And I think, yeah, they run into a Mets team that for some reason is able to just abuse them as they have over the past few years. And, you know, next thing you know, Phillies are in fourth place and everybody's having a good time except us. So, yeah, I think that's an all too envisionable scenario. And again, this is based on the recent play of the Philadelphia Phillies. Like, yeah, it sucks to speak in such broad terms, but at the same time, all I'm doing when I say things like this, and Liz, I don't want to speak for you, but I feel like you feel the same way. But like, prove me wrong. Give me a reason to not feel this way. We're not like so swayed. You and I aren't people who are like, oh, the Phillies lost last night. This team is fucked forever. No, We're a little more, I think, on the we're a little more rational than that, I would say. So
yeah,
for the team to have us in this point is a sign that how bad things have gone and how stupid things look right now. I'm avoiding the word hopeless because I don't think it's hopeless. I think it's just stupid. It is stupid. Injuries have played a large part in this team's struggles, and you really can't help injuries to the largest extent here. Like that, there's just no planning for health issues throughout the 162 game season with human bodies playing as much of a factor as they do in baseball. That being said, you know, yeah, you couldn't have planned for the pitching to be as ineffective as it's been, but at the same time, you can blame pitchers individually for not playing at the level that they've established that they can play at. You know, this is part of the sport, setting expectations and then living up to them. That's entirely what the sport is about. And yeah, you know, your Max Scherzers are a bunch of anomalies who are from another planet or another dimension where humans don't die. But, you know, there's other more realistic portrayals of greatness in baseball that we've seen by guys wearing Phillies uniforms the past couple of years, and they're just not doing that right now. So that's kind of where we're at, and you cannot help that, and I understand that. But, man, it has just been some really bad baseball that's made it so much harder lately to envision this team crawling out of a hole. So that kind of leads into my next question, Liz, which is the last question I'm going to ask you, and I think the most important. We've been talking about how the Phillies played the Braves. That series was not great to watch. They lost a heartbreaker in the bottom of the ninth inning on a walk-off hit by Brian McCann in game one. They managed to squeak out a win in game two that looked like a perfectly losable game. And then they got the utter life pounded out of them in game three. By a Braves team that has only, I think, gotten hotter since they've stopped playing the Phillies. Josh Donaldson is on a roll. They're getting contributions up and down the lineup. When guys like Josh Donaldson are hot and guys like Brian McCann are winning you games, then you turn to guys like Ronald Acuna and Ozzie Albies and Freddie Freeman, and you're just like, oh, well, those guys are just good like all the time. Like, if the guys who aren't good all the time are also good, this team is unstoppable. That is a hot, hot, hot team. It sucks to see as a Phillies fan, but it's impossible to deny. And so I need to ask you this. Have we seen the 2019 Phillies at their hottest already?
I think no. If you think about the best these players can be, we absolutely haven't. If we look at how good this team could be when most of them are performing at capacity, no. Whether they're going to get there in 2019 at any point is an entirely different question. But we haven't seen the best this team can be.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you just because we've seen individual performances, again, from these guys that have indicated they're better than how they've been. Man, though, part of this question, answering no to this, it depends on how much you subscribe to the idea that what if this is the real Bryce Harper? Do you think this is the real Bryce Harper? Okay, well, you made that noise, but...
No.
But
please don't. Don't make me think about that. I really don't want to.
Go ahead.
I don't want to think about it. I would like to just...
If you're this reluctant to answer, it makes me think that you think it might be the real Bryce Harper.
No, shut up. I don't think that.
Okay. Well, I don't think so either. So look, we're in a much healthier spot already. Is this the real Aaron Nola?
No.
I think this is much more likely that it's not the real Aaron Nola than it is not the real Bryce Harper. I think there's a bigger chance that we see an Aaron Nola we recognize more so than a Bryce Harper we recognize. And I think that's more important, frankly.
Yeah, I would agree with you. One part of the equation has to work. The Braves can get away with having bad pitching because their offense is hitting the crap out of everything. The best teams have both sides hitting and pitching that can do well. Teams that can hack it have one side that can do things really, really well. You know, the Rockies can get by on their offense playing at Coors and also mashing outside of Coors. You know, they can get away with that and have pitchers who are not great. You know, the Phillies don't have that. But they just need a little bit. They need something on one side. And I would like for it to be Aaron Nola that works out right now. I think he's the most important.
I agree. I think it is. If Bryce Harper gets hot, then cool. Bryce Harper and Scott Kingery are hot. Oh. That probably wins you a couple extra games, but not exactly the amount you need to win the NL East, or at least change the morale around here. If Aaron Nola puts together a couple of great Aaron Nola starts, he puts the team in a position to win, even on nights where they squeeze out only two or three runs. So, yeah.
Yeah, like a hitter can contribute, but a pitcher can control the entire game.
Exactly. So, yeah, I asked that question because I thought, what if it is? What if sweeping the Braves at the start of the season and looking really good and looking like a team that is exactly how we just described the Braves, a team whose offense is powerful enough to outpace its pitching deficiencies. Maybe we have seen this team at its hottest. It just feels, maybe we just need a full season of the 2019 Phillies under our belt before we really can say what this team looks like. Because frankly, we talked about how the last successful Phillies teams we saw were a lot of homegrown guys. You know, their core was entirely homegrown, the guys we remember. And then the pieces that were added weren't big free agent names for a while. They were guys like Shane Victorino and Jason Worth and Raul Ibanez, like, you know, guys you weren't necessarily household names. It wasn't until they added Cliff Lee, I guess, that they added someone even recognizable, but even he wasn't like the stud everyone had been yearning for on the market when they acquired him. So yeah, I think this team is full of guys who, you know, other than Bryce Harper, maybe haven't signed on long term. Maybe they haven't been like digested and absorbed in the fan thinking as like, oh yeah, real Phillies. Yeah, this is great. Like, I don't think anyone likes dislikes any of them in particular, except, you know, the beating Gene Segura is taking on sports radio, which again, we're not going to talk about because it's stupid. But I feel like there's a lack of recognition, perhaps. You know, these guys are known throughout baseball, but as Phillies, you know, they're not given the Raul Ibanez treatment. They're not showing up and tearing the cover off the ball and giving you a reason to chant their names at games. Some of them have been really hot at points, but they've fallen off, and that's contributed to the team's lack of success lately. So yeah, I think there's a version of this team that is just on another level. I do. I guess that's my conclusion here, is that maybe we might have to wait till the second half. But I think there's a much better version of this team that exists, and it might change because they have time to look in the mirror and scream at themselves, or it might change because they make an addition or two that really helps. I hope they don't throw in a bunch of Jose Bautistas and Adrubal Cabreras and Justin Boers and hope for the best like the end of last season. But I hope the additions are more strategic and thought out and purposeful. But perhaps that's the change this team needs. But I think at the end of the day, yeah, something's got to change. And even if it's just an adjustment Aaron Nola makes to become the Aaron Nola we recognize, or a player Matt Klentak goes out and acquires, something's got to change, because this team as is isn't working. And if this really is a team that wants to win now, they've got to do something, because it's now, and they're not winning.
Yeah, the time is, you know, every game they play is one less game they have to get better permanently. And at some point, you're going to have to, you know, you have to turn off the machine in your brain and start acclimating yourself to a possible future where things are not as good for a little while, you know, where this season doesn't turn out the way we all hoped it would. And I would love to prevent that for as long as possible. So they have to get better. They have to get better. Please, please get better. This is not fun. I don't like this. I don't like this.
So who is your favorite player on the 2019 Phillies right now? As bad as things have gotten, who's your favorite? I feel like I know the answer, but
it's Scott.
Yeah, that's the answer. Okay.
The end.
Are you sure?
Zach Eflin is the close.
Oh, yeah. Jay Bruce went 3-for-3 tonight with two RBIs and a walk.
Yeah.
Can't get on board.
He's Tommy Joseph.
Oh, that's rough.
He's got no. in that he's got old man face.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
He looks like your friendly neighborhood insurance agent.
I thought he was in his 40s when they acquired him.
I know.
Early
right?
30s. Listen, impossible.
I'm sure he's younger than me. Listen, the guy who recently won the U.S. Open was my age. I felt vindicated on a very deep level, which is not good. My birthday is coming up.
Well, I'm waiting for J.D. Hammer to break out because, boy, I'm ready for him to be a household name. So I can't say he's my...
That's a fan group.
Yeah, exactly. Hammer's Toolkit. That was my first... Or Tool Time. Ooh, that's... All right. Yeah, see, we're already we're brainstorming better ideas.
Like plastic tool belts and giant glasses.
Bunch of Al Borlands out there. Yeah. No, I think that's...
But the glasses. Yeah. They have to wear the glasses or else it's stupid because it's the most identifiable thing about him. And if it's not some sort of glasses,
I've never seen a player who arrived in Major League Baseball so primed for nicknames, fan groups, t-shirts, merch. I've never seen... He was like he was a gift package left on a marketer's doorstep. We just need to see some dominant outings from him. Just see him close out a few key games and do something or make some quote that makes everybody freak out. And he's just golden for life. Like it's waiting. It's sitting on the tee right now, which is the team has sucked lately and nobody's thinking about it. But I'm telling you, the kid is prime to be a fan favorite. And I'm just waiting for it to happen. Well, let me ask you one more thing. Mikel Franco didn't play an inning of an entire doubleheader. He did. He played tonight. He got the start at third base. Obviously, he went 1-for-4, scored a run. Mikel Franco, Liz, what's next? What's the end? What's the plan here? Seems dicey.
I think this is their plan. They're just going to try and make it work at third base until someone better becomes available.
Is really no one else available right now? The man's hitting .206 with a .648 OPS. I feel like there's better third basemen on the Phillies, which they obviously agree with because, again, they haven't been playing him a whole lot lately.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. What they're doing right now with him is what they're just going to keep doing.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen the Phillies do this to players before, and it is very much an inclination or an indication that they just don't like a guy anymore. He's had 22 at bats in his last seven games. He's had 22 at bats. He's scored 2 runs, has 4 hits. He's hitting .182. I mean, you know, like there's not much to do here. In his last 30 games, he's hitting .156. So I don't know what else to do here except conclude that Mikel Franco's time on the Phillies is done. And right now we are just waiting out the stretch here to see what the team does next from a roster position, because Mikel Franco is just not the guy anymore. And you know what? Frankly, Liz, I'm relieved. I've been rooting for Mikel Franco. I'm not going to claim that it was any like hard work or that I, again, led a fan group of Mikel Franco diehards or anything. But like, we wanted him to succeed in every patch of success we had. We thought maybe this is it. You know, this year was the biggest indication of that. And I totally agree if the Phillies were like, oh, look, Mikel Franco's doing it, like that moving him down to the 8-hole has turned him into this prolific hitter. It's making the team better. And the reason he's down there is because we acquired Bryce freaking Harper. So, like, obviously the team is better. He's the guy, one of the guys you need to perform at a higher level after acquiring a core that you are going to rely on to perform at that level if you're going to be a playoff team. And we thought we had that guy. We thought that he had emerged finally. He hasn't. And I think the team recognizes that. And if that's Mikel Franco's last chance, frankly, I wouldn't have been surprised if it had come earlier. That he's lasted this long is incredible. That the team must have just had so much faith in him. Because again, he's been around for a long time. Like it's been a while that Mikel Franco has been playing for the Phillies. He's not a young upstart hopeful rookie guy anymore. You know, he played 16 games for the Phillies in 2014 and 80 games in 2015. And since then, you know, he's played in most of the season for the Phillies. And that's 3 seasons from 2016 to 2018. And he's just, never been that guy. His best period was probably 2015, when in 80 games, he hit 280 with a 497 slugging and an 840 OPS. And, you know, that
we've been chasing that ever since.
Yeah, that looked pretty good. He had that coming out weekend against the Yankees one year that we thought, oh, this is it. This guy is our stud. He's finally here. Man, didn't stick. That? Beginning of this year, didn't stick. Yeah, it's time.
There have been a bunch of other times that it hasn't stuck. And that's the thing, is that our relationship with Michael Franco has been so long that it's had a lot of phases. We've seen him hit small patches of great baseball. And we've wanted, and you know, every time we think this is it, this is the guy. We've seen him a lot. He comes back sometimes to visit, you know, he never stays long. Maybe this time he'll stay for good, but he never does. And that's the problem, is that in between those small flashes of brilliance, he's a bad baseball player. He's just not good enough. And I hate that, because I love him and I love his spirit when he plays and his passion. I love watching him at third base. He's a big guy, and watching him do that is fun and cool, even when he doesn't always succeed. But, you know, you can be that type of third baseman if you hit well. And Michael Franco does not hit well. And so that means he just doesn't have any utility on the Phillies.
They have no use for another player in the lineup who's unable to produce, frankly, at this point.
Exactly. And they with have other enough. Guys. And they're paying
and with
them.
Other guys in the lineup, you've seen hints that they can be productive on a high level before. And with him, you haven't. He's kind of the only guy that you can say that about. So they're perfectly justified to give him less playing time and move on. Yeah, it sucks. But like at the same time, when you're at a point that not only presumably the Phillies are at, but also the fans clearly are at, where it's just like something's got to go here. Like you can't have room for a guy. And clearly they made less room for him lately. So it's in everybody's heads. But I mean, just go down this lineup. Bryce Harper, Reese Hoskins, Jay Bruce, JT Realmuto, Gene Segura, Scott Kingery, Cesar Hernandez. That's a pretty good lineup when you think about like the good versions of those players that we've seen over the years. Michael Franco, the good version of him barely exists. So I don't think we need to talk anybody into having Michael Franco not on the team anymore. It's just, you know, he's still here. You just might have forgotten, unfortunately. Yeah, for him.
We're at the point with some of these players that it's time to say goodbye. You know, it happened with Aaron Altair. It's going to happen with more players.
Yeah.
You know, it's just time.
And, you know, maybe it's an indication of a bigger problem that a lot of the guys that you're saying goodbye to are guys who the Phillies brought up, and the players who are expected to contribute more are players they had to go out and buy. But you know what? That's the position the Phillies found themselves in. And if their biggest asset winds up being their wallet and that's how they acquire talent, then, you know, hey, that's how it's going to go. And I think that's totally fine.
Did it for years.
Yeah.
The Yankees did it for years. There's nothing wrong with that. And anyone who criticizes that is wrong.
Yeah, it's just stupid.
You grow whatever players you can and you buy whatever you can't.
Yep.
The Phillies are lucky. They have an owner willing to spend the money. You know why? Some teams have to do it that way. They have to do it because their owners aren't willing to spend money.
Yeah.
You have to do it the way the Astros do it because their owner just wants the most profit, and the, you know, the president and GM are all on board.
Yes.
So, you know, be happy that we're like the Yankees, who recently announced that they are not afraid of going over the luxury tax to win this year. They want to do it. And I'm like, yes, put the money down. Spend it wherever you can right now. You know, whether that means raiding their farm. I mean, they can say that. There aren't a lot of players out there to be signed right now. But if they mean that for the future, then that's a huge asset. That's a huge thing to be willing to say. Like, screw the rest of the tight-fisted owners. I'm going all in because I want to be a god in my own city. That's it.
Yeah, what happened to that? What happened to that John Middleton? Where'd he go?
I don't know what happened to him. But, I mean, granted, I think that, you know, if he was going to spend for dudes like, you know, Kimbrel and Keuchel, he would have done it months ago. He clearly wasn't willing to do it, which is why I think mostly the Phillies, who they are right now, is who they're going to stay. They've invested whatever they can invest this year. There's really nothing out there. Mm-hmm. You know, they really want to hold on to what they have in the farm system for now. There isn't
perfectly believable.
Yeah, there isn't a great player I think they can acquire for what they're willing to give up, because they don't have a whole, they don't have a giant cabinet anymore full of, you know, shiny prospects. They have started to spend some of them, and others have been in the farm system long enough to not pan out. Trade them one of early, guys.
Speaking of acquiring talent, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to have a little fun with a dream situation where the Phillies acquire some more talent to give them a hand. So we'll be right back after this break. Well, any regular listeners to Continued Success will know that Liz and I are obviously chronicling the 2009 Phillies and everything that was going on in that hallowed pennant-winning season for the Philadelphia Phillies, celebrating its 10-year anniversary this year. And this week, we thought we'd have a little fun, given that the 2019 Phillies are so in need of an injection of talent. And I know we just got done discussing how we didn't really think, you know, perhaps there's a big chance that they just kind of stand pat and go with what they've got for now. But imagining a scenario where you could pluck a member of the 2009 Phillies, a team that went all the way to the World Series, and drag them through space and time and drop them sickly and disoriented into the 2019 Phillies roster.
Dark.
Who on that 2009 team would be the biggest benefit for the 2019 Phillies to have? And I submitted this question to Twitter, and we got a lot of the answers you'd think. So we'll obviously cover those. We got a couple of other answers, and we'll talk about them all. So Liz, I'm just going to run through a couple of these with you, and we'll just talk about, you know, what it would be like if that particular person was on the Phillies right
Let's
now.
Do it.
So, having discussed the Phillies' woes and having listed that pitching, starting pitching in particular, is one of their biggest woes, and considering that this guy was acquired in the middle of the season in 2009 and pretty much won them their only World Series games they did win in 2009, it's easy to imagine the Phillies picking up Cliff Lee at the trade deadline. He seems like the pretty obvious answer, and I think he was the obvious answer. He's the reason I almost hesitated to ask the question, but I thought, you know what, some people will get creative with this and give us answers that we weren't expecting. But Cliff was overwhelmingly the majority answer. Some people felt it wasn't even close, that no other choice would even matter, that it was Cliff, because you needed a stopper. And frankly, it's tough to argue with. You know, like this, imagining this team with a guy on it who looked as dominant as Cliff Lee did in game one of the 2009 World Series. Oh boy, this team's got a couple more wins if Cliff Lee's on it. So I don't know. Is he your top choice as well?
I think so. Like, it's hard to know. I have my most of my eggs in a different basket, but it's hard to argue with the Cliff Lee choice. He was so good. He's exactly what the team needed. You know, you look at him in the playoffs and he was so good. I'm also looking at his playoff starts in 2010 for Texas, which just makes me want to cry.
Oh, man.
Like that,
you forget
that,
all about it.
I'm not going to lie to you. It has been years since I have applied that logic to the 2010 season, and now I hate everything. I
can't
completely
do it.
Forgot.
Liz, we're having fun. You can't do it.
We've got over a year before we have to think about this for good. Okay. Cliff Lee is amazing. That's the point of all of this. And having him on the 2009 Phillies, I mean, on the 2019 Phillies, even though he sort of gives off the vibe of a serial killer, would be great.
Oh, it was July 31st. It was the exact trade deadline when Cliff Lee made his first start with the Philadelphia Phillies. He faced the San Francisco Giants. He went all nine innings. He threw 109 pitches. They beat the Giants 5-1. He allowed only four hits. He allowed only one earned run. I'm pretty sure he got on base and scored a run in that game, because I feel like the picture in the paper was him like smiling absurdly as he ran across home plate, because he was an American League pitcher. He'd never been on base before. And he'd never like scored a run before. And you were just like, okay, this guy's gonna be a guy. And in his next five starts, he didn't go anything. He didn't throw anything lower than seven innings, and the Phillies won all five of them. So yeah, it's tough to imagine. It's tough to imagine. Go ahead.
We're gonna hit some stretches of incredible Cliff Lee pitching in the next couple of years. he was just unstoppable when he was good. Like, I want to go back and watch complete games of him pitching, because they were, you know, like Roy Halladay's best games, Cole Hamill's best games, just games that have a rhythm to them with the pitching. Cliff Lee was so good at that because he wasted no time. He wasted no time, and he just loved to throw strikes. God, he was so good.
You're right. He loved to throw strikes. That's a great way to put it. And frankly, yeah, here's another little stat. In those first five starts with the Phillies, the highest amount of earned runs he allowed in any start was one.
My heart. Where have these just gone?
His fourth start for the Phillies was on August 19th against the Diamondbacks. It was an 8-1 win. He again threw all nine innings. It was a two-hit game in which he allowed zero earned runs, walked zero batters, threw 106 pitches, and struck out 11. It was a gem.
And you look at how baseball has changed between now and then, the difference in pitching. It's not just the way, you know, managers use pitchers. It's the amount, it's, you know, the changes and the advances in hitting. You know, I sort of wish the balance would switch again. Because, you know, people say that's not necessarily completely entertaining baseball, but man, it's entertaining baseball when your team can do some hitting and also shut down the other team's hitters. That's exceptional.
I gotta tell you, I enjoyed watching Cliff Lee pitch at a machine gun pace. It was never boring to watch him get outs. It just wasn't. And frankly, we probably got too used to watching him and Halladay and Peak Hamill's pitch in at that high a level, because we saw some pretty low levels of pitching after that. And it was just like, what the hell is this? What is this? What am I looking at?
They were also different. You know, Cliff Lee was just an old school, throw it in there, strike him out kind of guy. Roy Halladay was definitely different. He, you know, was about accuracy. And Hamill's was different than that. Watching the three of them pitch so well in all different ways. My God. Eventually we'll get to 2011 and we'll just spend, you know, entire podcasts worshiping good pitching, because this was an era where you could find it in a lot of places. You know, the Phillies weren't the only team to have great pitching. Yes. There was so much of it around at this period, but there were also, you know, big bursts of offense, and the Phillies were a team that could shut down another team, you know, with their offense.
So staying on the theme of pitching, another name I saw mentioned multiple times, which surprised me a little bit, was Jay Happ, who was on the Phillies at this point.
He was. I forget that he was on the Phillies sometimes. It was a million years ago.
My question would be to anyone who said Jay Happ, yes, that answer makes perfect sense. The first start he made of the season was against the Yankees, no less, the team the Phillies would eventually lose to in the World Series. But it was the first start they gave him. It was on May 23rd. He went six innings, allowed four hits, two earned runs, no walks, and four strikeouts. And the Phillies lost 5-4, but he gave them a pretty good start for a young pitcher. So when I said it makes perfect sense, it makes sense. It doesn't make perfect sense. I'm going to correct myself. Because if you're going to pick a pitcher and you're not going to pick Cliff Lee, I got to wonder what exactly you're trying to do there. But my point is that, yeah, okay, I understand that if you're just trying to look past the obvious answer, J-Hap, you know, that's an effective one too. And if the Phillies had an effective young pitcher this year, boy, even just effective, not elite, just effective, just steady, the way J-Hap was. You know, he didn't throw as many complete games as Cliff Lee. He threw two complete games in 2009, one against the Blue Jays on June 27th and one against the Rockies on August 5th. And both of them were shut.
That statement is ridiculous. He didn't throw as many complete games. He threw two, which is a lot.
Those were both shutouts too, by the way. And in the one against the Rockies, he threw 127 pitches. Yes.
All right. That's a little much, but I mean, Charlie Manuel was a guy who trusted his pitching coach, and his pitching coach trusted his pitchers. Rich Doobie trusted those guys. I think this is Rich Doobie at this point.
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he was the pitching coach a long time. Him and Charlie had a great relationship, and it showed, because this was a time of very I think, very good handling of starting pitchers. The bullpen was sometimes a different issue.
A little different. Which kind of brings me to my next point, which is this is the first, one of the first answers that popped into my head if I was, well, since I was trying to like be creative about it. But a couple of people said this name as well. Totally counts. But you mentioned him, Charlie Manuel, as an addition to the Phillies right now, who would be a big help. And while I don't disagree, I also have to mention that, like, look, people had plenty of complaints about the way Charlie did things, even after he was welcomed into the hearts of Philadelphia Phillies fans, even after they won a World Series. People were questioning his bullpen management. Like you said, he just handed pretty much the pitching duties off to his pitching coach when it was it's widely known him and Jimmy Williams co-managed, essentially, or at least that's how Jimmy Williams felt, the 2008 Phillies. Jimmy Williams, the bench coach, didn't come back because he felt like he was owed a little more after coaching the team in such a higher capacity. So, I'm just saying, I don't think we'd be complaining any less about the manager whether or not Charlie Manuel was in charge. I don't know. I have a follow-up question to this. So just real quick, do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree with you. I think that's true. I also think it's easy to idealize Charlie now. And if you pick him up and put him then or now in a manager seat now, I don't think he can hack it. I think the game has gotten to a point where it's very different. I don't know if the way he understands it is something that, you know, would be able to translate to how things are today. Because I think the Phillies undoubtedly need a modern manager. They need a guy who's, you know, they need a Craig Counsell. They need that type of guy who is able to connect with the players and manage a decent game. You know, Torey Lovullo down in Arizona is another guy like that, who's able to blend, you know, sort of like the old school personality with a newer understanding of the game. If you could take Charlie Manuel and Gabe Kapler and cram them together, actually.
Wouldn't that, yeah.
This is what I want.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I think it's exactly what I want. You can get Charlie's, you know, innate sense for people and, you know, his hitting prowess, his personality, and then you get, you know, some of Gabe's technical knowledge and other things that he brings to the table, and you cram them into one person. I think you might get what the Phillies are looking for right now.
Yeah, I was gonna.
So if we can bring that technology with us when we do this, I think we have a shot to make
our person mashing technology. Yes. Yeah, I also saw. I mean, I agree with you, and I was going to ask. Do you think, you know, the concept a couple of years ago popped into my head. The Marlins, when they, I believe it was because of the Hanley Ramirez stuff, where Freddy Gonzalez yelled at Hanley Ramirez in the dugout, and then like not too long after that, the Marlins fired Freddy Gonzalez, and then I believe that's when they brought Jack McKean back, and he quickly, like, just in that hiring alone, became the oldest manager in Major League Baseball. I believe Charlie Manuel was the manager he took over from. So I'm asking, you said Charlie Manuel, you don't know how well he would do in this day and age. My thought was, can you imagine a scenario where that happens and it's Charlie Manuel the Phillies bring back, since he's still so involved with the organization? And I was going to say, do you think that helps? But I think you already answered that question.
Yeah, I think I did. I also don't think there is a way that Matt, could you imagine Matt Clinton?
No, I cannot.
I literally can't. Like, there's no, I can't imagine any situation where he'd be drunk enough or drugged enough or under enough coercion to do that, because it's just a different game. It's just a different game than it was. And Charlie was the perfect manager for those Phillies at that time in the game. And you know, that's why it worked.
Well, real quick here, I want to go over some of the other names we saw mentioned. Obviously, and we don't have to dwell on this too much because we're going to talk about him a lot in the days to come. And certainly tomorrow, there's going to be plenty of Chase Utley coverage on The Good Fight, given that the Phillies are having a retirement ceremony for their golden boy.
I better be able to watch that online. My bridal shower is in Philadelphia next weekend, and I would miss it for this game. But unfortunately, it's happening this weekend, and I am not there. And so I hope there's a way for me to watch it online, because I would need to.
I just want to say yeah. that if Cliff Lee is an obvious answer, Chase Utley's the only other obvious answer. 8.2 WAR.
I mean, my answer. My God.
I have a piece going up about Chase Utley tomorrow. Obviously, celebration of his retirement ceremony, in which one of the elements is, it just feels like he did everything right. Like all those plays, they talk about hustling. The Phillies this year have gotten thrown out at the plate so much. Bryce Harper is getting thrown out every time. Every time he tries to be aggressive, it doesn't pay off, which is kind of a reason I think the team's going to see some success in the near future, because the pen eventually. That bad luck eventually you're just going to start getting some safe calls where the team has been out.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Eventually things will have to get better.
My point was that with Chase Utley, it never seemed like being aggressive was the wrong answer for him. Even in his most infamous incident when he was with the Dodgers and broke Ruben Tejada's leg sliding, even at that point, you know, the play was, you know, it had the result he wanted. And the rule that was invented because of that play it makes sense. Like, okay, we got to do this because somebody had their leg broken, and it was a dirty slide, but it wasn't against the rules. So I feel like that's, you can't argue with adding a player like that to your team, and putting Chase Utley in his prime on this team would obviously be a huge boon. We also saw, I had a guy mention Ryan Howard, which I was touched by because, you know, so many people would just skip right over him. He said, this person suggested that, you know, a Harper, Howard, Hoskins, middle of the order would be really great, but then they mentioned until they all get cold at once, which is perfectly imaginable. But like, is a real Muto Hoskins Harper block much less intimidating than that? I would say more so, because real Muto is going to be a more consistent hitter than Ryan Howard was. Ryan Howard was a prolific slugger, but man, did he go cold a lot. Jimmy Rollins, somebody mentioned the need for a leader on this team and cited Jimmy as a great stirrer of the pot, as someone who could really get this team motivated again. We saw a couple of mentions of Shane Victorino because of this team's need for a center fielder. Obviously, Scott Kingery has, you know, we don't have a lot of complaints about Scott Kingery, but if there were an actual center fielder on this team, I think people would feel a lot better.
By the way, I just want to say this at Jimmy Rollins makes me miss Andrew McCutchen a lot.
So much.
He reminds me of him in his attitude towards the game. Like McCutchen, he tweeted, "Damn, I miss playing," recently. And I just cried. I wept because he loves playing the game so much and he hates that he's not able to do it right now. And I think the team is missing him in a big way.
Oh, I think so too. And I think, I feel like, it's not that people have forgotten him, but like he's gone now. So you're just kind of like moving on mentally. And that sucks even more because this team, boy, he was good for this team. And wow. I think his loss is going to be one of the biggest reasons this team doesn't get as far as it intended to go, frankly.
Yeah, I think it's already being felt. I think since he, you know, I think he got hurt, the team has been in this mini free fall.
Yeah. First half, Raul Ibanez, of course, got a mention, which I appreciate because you can't not mention that. Raul Ibanez was an absolute monster for the Phillies. We talked about him on this podcast around the time that the Phillies acquired him to replace Pat Burrell, who left in free agency to go to the Rays, the team the Phillies had just beaten in the World Series, which I always forget that. And that's like always cracks me up a little bit. But Raul Ibanez came in. He was hitting 359 for the Phillies by the end of April. He was hitting 332 by the end of May. He was still hitting 312 by the end of June and still, you know, barely hitting over 300 by the end of July, but still, you know, a huge contributor to this offense.
He was their all-star. He went to the all-star game that year.
Oh, we're going to talk about the all-star game. I can't wait. This was the most Phillies uniforms in a dugout I've ever seen at a non-Phillies specific game ever. And it was glorious. And Raul was definitely a part of that. So Ibanez was a huge, you know, he was worth a mention at least, giving a boost to the offense. Of course, we got a couple of jokesters in here mentioning Joe Blanton, Chan Ho Park. Liz, your fiance mentioned Eric Bruntlett.
Oh, God. I mean, something else. he's with his groups then this weekend and out doing bachelor weekend things. So, He's not even here to hear me say that from three rooms away. So it's fine. He doesn't even listen to the podcast.
We had an honorable mention for Matt Stairs. And finally, one guy mentioned high school senior Mike Trout, which I felt was a good answer to go out on. Just slip an 18-year-old Mike Trout in there. No one having any idea who he is. But you know what? It's Philadelphia. We probably all were very aware of who Mike Trout was by 2009.
I mean, I almost joke answered Brad Lidge because twisting that knife in my memory is never out of style.
Woof. Well, long story short, no matter what timeline they came from, this team could use a boost from somewhere, whether it's from somebody already on the team or more likely somebody from outside of it. Who knows where it's going to come from? Phillies lost for the third straight game tonight to the Nationals. Things are looking grim. Hopefully the next 10 games, they have a chance to improve, crawl out of this hole, show that they are still capable of winning ball games and maybe even get some decent freaking weather. That'd be a nice change as well too. So hopefully there's better days ahead and the Phillies don't have to rely on any sort of, shifting of time and space to acquire new talent as we did on the podcast tonight. But as always, download, rate, and subscribe to all the podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hidden Season with John Stolness and The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We have a new episode up about the... I completely forget what the episode's about. So... Trust me, it's a good one. No, it's about Jimmy O'Connell, a member of the New York Giants way back in the day, I believe back in like 1923, who owned the Phillies so hard, but was acquired by the Giants at a time when it was suspected that he might have had a hookworm. This and other bizarre this and other bizarre elements play huge factors into the another compelling narrative that we thread on The Dirty Inning, a podcast we tell about the most obscure or dumbest innings in Phillies history. So make yourself a part of all of those podcasts, as well as our Patreon, patreon.com/hiddenseason, where you can find all sorts of bonus content, including movie reviews, extra Dirty Inning content. John Stolness has a baseball card feature he's very proud of this week in Phillies history, all sorts of extra content just for $5. So we appreciate you listening. And in any capacity you contribute, we thank you for taking part in the Good Fight podcast family. Thank you so much. And we will talk to you next time on Continued Success.